That I just turned it on. So we're going to talk about being led through the fire a little bit. And so I'm not seeing it still, Hill, so I'll probably glance up on a time or two to make sure you're seeing what I'm seeing. I was thinking about kind of piggybacking off of Dave's lesson on the Lord's Supper and about being really citizens of God's kingdom. But we live in this world, and very often, though, you know, the unease and the difficulties that we have faced recently, they seem unusual in our country, but the reality is they're pretty normal throughout human history. And if we were in fact to list, every one of us were simply to take the time and go list every difficulty you have faced in your life, assuming you could remember them, from the time you were a newborn baby, and you could list every difficulty you have faced in your lifetime, it would be a fairly long list if you have lived any period of time. And the truth is, we all have faced varying levels of difficulty. Some of our lists might be very long, and some of them might be relatively shorter. But everybody has issues. Everybody has difficulties. None of us get through life without enduring trials. And that's actually what the word fire represents. And we're going to look at that in a little bit in Isaiah 43. And even the waters, because he talks about both the waters and the fire. I'm just going to use the word fire today. But in the, as we read the passage in a minute, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. But he's referring to the fact of all the difficulties and of all the challenges that we are going to face in this world. And living. And I've talked about it a little bit in the past, that very often when we face disappointment or we are upset, most often we are really disappointed or upset when our expectations are really different from what we receive. So for give you an example, you've probably all at one time or another received some sort of birthday gift or some kind of Christmas gift that disappointed you because you were wanting something specific. Now, I remember as a kid wanting something specific, and I'm like, I was asking, you know, I wanted this thing. It was on every list. It was the only thing on my list. Like if you go and you watch A Christmas Story and he had his, you know, BB gun that he had to have. And initially when Christmas was over, when he thought was over, he was really disappointed, even though he had a lot of wonderful gifts. But his dad had the BB gun in the corner. He hadn't seen it yet. But he was really disappointed. And all of a sudden, this most wonderful Christmas that the story is about, it was before that moment of him getting that gift, it was terrible. Because what he wanted and what he received were so different. And very often, you and I, we have the same thing. And I think a lot of times, because we want life to be wonderful and perfect and always fair and just, and we would like those things to happen, and we're working for those things to happen, and then they don't happen. And so we get upset. We get disappointed in it. But very often, I think, we have to remember that God is urging us as His fellow or citizens of His kingdom, that we need to understand that we are travelers. We're sojourners. We're pilgrims. So I had another thought before I kind of wanted to link into what Dave was talking about, because I thought it fit in nicely. But that is, when you go on a vacation, what do you expect? What do you hope for, and what do you expect? And so you hope, I know when I go on a vacation and I have reserved a room somewhere, I want it to be the best location in the hotel. That's what I want. I don't know that I'll always get that. And my wife knows that if I get there and I see the room has not been cleaned and it's a little messy, I'm probably going to call the front desk. Like, do you have a different one? This one is not really ready. And so she knows that. So she always lets me go in first and take a look at it and talk to the front desk if necessary. But The reality is, what I hope for, what I want is not always what I get. Because sometimes I get sick on vacation. I fly, you know, we had Janae for her, I think it was graduation, the year she graduated high school. We went to Disney World. Not like that's an unusual thing for us. But we went to Disney World on a trip. She had pneumonia the whole trip. We found out on the flight, she starts to cough. It's real little at first. We get to Florida in the midst of their terrible humidity, and it gets worse. And we think she's just being a big baby. Turns out she had pneumonia when we got back. And so that whole trip was completely affected by health. I've had it. I've gotten sick on trips. You've had car trips, right? Well, some people just went up to Bruno Dunes. You come back a little early, right? Because of yesterday's storm? Were you expecting camping out to have the big storm yesterday? A monsoon in the middle of your camping? We've had that. Julie and I have lived through some of those in the White Mountains of Arizona. Don't go there in June and July. Just recommend that to you now. Unless you have a nice RV, you can stay in the whole time. You're going to hit monsoons. So expectations, what we think will happen and what actually happens, creates a level of disappointment for us. And God is telling us that we are going to have difficulties, that that's not going to go away. And they're going to come in various forms too. They're not always going to seem right. They're not always going to seem fair. They're not always going to seem righteous or just. But they're going to happen. They're going to be real. But he also needs us to know that you and I don't have to worry about them. Because yes, they're temporary. So even if they were to last all, you know, 80 or 90 years, or if you were to live to be 100, and all 100 years of your life was that difficult, what does that compare to eternity? That's, by the way, the point that Paul is making in Romans chapter 8. If I were to compare eternity, and if let's just take 1,000 years, that's not even close to the concept of eternity. But what would you compare 80 or 90 years to 1,000? It's like, well, I could go through 80 or 90. Because like, if I could you handle 8 or 9 bad minutes, you know, for an hour of good? Probably. If you knew that. And if you knew that was coming, if you knew I'm just enduring it temporarily, then I can get through it. And this is important because I want to read here Isaiah 43, and as God talked through Isaiah to his people, Israel, and as we know in the New Testament, that we are Israel. Those who are his redeemed, those who are his children and citizens of his kingdom. He says, "But now, thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine." You ever wonder what the name is? Actually, what the name is isn't important. So a lot of times we have these passages where he talks about, "I called you by name," and we always want to know what that name is. The reality is that's actually not important because that's not the point. Do you have names for your so all the parents, do you have some kind of pet names for your spouse or your children that maybe other people don't know? Why is that important? It's because of your connection to them. You have special names for people close to you because you have a special connection to them and you know them so well. And you name them, right? As parents, you name your children because they're your children. And so when he calls you by a name, he's not referring to, the importance is not what the name is. The importance is that he named you. He's your parent. He knows you. He knows every fiber of you. He knows what you're like. He knows what you go through. He knows how things affect you. He knows everything about you more than anybody else ever. And more than ourselves even. And that's the point. That's actually a whole nother lesson. I'll leave that for another time. But he says in verse 2, because that's what he said, the first part. You're mine. I've called you. I've redeemed you. when you pass through the waters. Now, when you read that phrase, I don't know how many of you think of it. When I read that phrase, I'm often thinking of some sort of almost baptismal image, shadow in the Old Testament. The idea of passing through the waters often has a sort of, you know, sacrificial purification rite about it. That's not at all this one. That's not what he's talking about here. He says, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. And through rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. And so what he's saying is, even though you can be overwhelmed by the waters, and I've lived through that. Frank has out traveling in his waders, and I've even heard stories of him kind of getting caught up and taken away by the river. Don't let the water get into your waders, and especially in the Boise River here. But I've been taken away by white water, thought I was going to die. I had no real control. It kind of tossed me around like I didn't expect. But I ended up safe through it. And that's the idea he's talking about. That even when you go through those difficult waters that are too powerful for you, too strong for you, because people often underestimate the power of water. People that drive through it sometimes. You know, a little river, you know, it's flooding and river's kind of going across the road. Oh, I can drive through that. And there goes the car. And he's telling you, this is important. And then the second part, because he's saying the same thing about the waters and the fire. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. Does anybody have that expectation? That when you go through fire, you're going to be just like, you know, Daniel and his friends thrown into the furnace, right? Anybody have that expectation? I don't. If I get my hand in the fire, I expect it to hurt. And so far in my life, it has always worked out that way. I'm not disappointed. But what he's saying here is that when I pass through the fire, I'm not going to be burned by it. That's not my expectation in terms of a human experience. And he's talking about the same idea. When things are so overwhelming and out of your control and you can't actually have any power over them, he says, but I have power over them. And I have power over you. And I can keep you safe just like he did Daniel and his friends, or Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego when they were thrown into the furnace. They were kept safe through that. And we know the story that God appeared in the fire, walking with them, because he has that power. And that's what he's telling us. And so one of the things that when he says you're not going to be burned, the flame shall not consume you. And so when you think about the idea that God is trying to get us to see, notice he did not say, I'm going to remove fire from you or waters from you. He did not say that. He did not tell us we won't have trials, we won't have troubles. In fact, Jesus kind of reminded his disciples before he kind of left the earth that you're going to have trouble, but I've given you my peace. And so he set that in them. So when years later, when Peter was arrested and expected to be killed the next morning, and he slept soundly like a baby. Now, I wouldn't be able to do that. If you were to tell me I'm dying tomorrow morning, I would not be able to sleep soundly tonight. Peter did, though. And he had that expectation. Not only that he was going to be killed, but that he would also be okay. And so because both of those things were true and he knew them, he was ready for it. James had already been killed. That's why I tell you, I think Peter, when he was first arrested, thought he was going to be killed. James had already been killed. Peter's arrested. Angel releases him, gets him out of there. And instead of running for his life, so he's not arrested again, he's right out there in public, preaching away, letting them arrest him again if they want. Because expectations. Because he knew he was not going to go, He knew he wasn't going to die in peace. He had been told that. And for you and I, he's told us we're not going to live in peace. He hasn't told us what our death's going to be like, but he has told us what our life's going to be like, and it's not going to be peaceful all through our lives. We're going to have trials. We're going to have the same ones every human has, but then we're also possibly going to have those that only God's people have. And so the fire won't be removed, but his redeemed won't be consumed by it either. And so when you look at, and I want to look at Psalm 66, because he writes about it here, and actually this whole psalm is great. For time, I'm just going to hit these five verses. But the whole psalm really talks about this concept. He says, "Bless our God, O peoples. Let the sound of his praise be heard, who has kept our soul among the living and has not let our feet slip." Now that last part sounds like, okay, he's kind of kept us from that, you know, that water kind of getting us and falling down, and he's kept us from that. But notice in verse 10, "For you, O God, have tested us. You have tried us as silver is tried." How is silver tried? That's what he's telling us. Well, you throw it in the fire. And then it melts. And then all the impurities in it, the bad stuff that's in the silver, separates from the silver. And you kind of scrape it away. And then you let it kind of cool down again, and you got more pure silver. That's, by the way, why James is telling us to count it all joy when we fall into trials. It's the process of purification. It's not easy. It's not without difficulty. It's not without pain. But it's necessary to grow. Most of us, I think, if we were honest with ourselves, and we think the most growth we've ever had in our lives have generally come from some of the most trying times in our lives. Some of the greatest lessons we've learned, they come from overcoming those difficulties, not from not having them. What do we call people who never have any difficulties in their life? We occasionally see people who we think have no difficulties, get born into an incredibly rich family, have everything they can have. You know, at 16th birthday, it's like, oh, let me give you a Mercedes, you know. We think, and like, and they want for nothing. They get everything they can imagine. Now, the reality is a lot of those people have struggles you don't know about, because rich people's families are not all wonderful. And, you know, there's a lot of things can be happening inside that family that can make the value of a Mercedes car pretty worthless. And the reality is a lot of people are going through things that don't look like it. But sometimes we look at people who seem like they've kind of had everything given to them, and what do we think about them? They're spoiled, right? They don't know what life's really like. They kind of just skate on like everything will work out. And we think, more often than not, they're waiting for a big fall, because they haven't had one yet. Because most people get them. And so he's telling us that God tests us. A little while back was in a conversation, and I had mentioned testing, and somebody had kind of wondered, does God really test us? And I didn't realize that was a question some Christians have in their mind. There's a number of places it talks about God testing. And so I kind of mentioned a couple of places, but it's actually quite clear. But understand, testing is not the same thing as tempting. God is not trying to get us to fall. He's trying to get us, you know, to get through the challenge, still standing. But he doesn't want us to go through life without challenges. And so he tests us. He tries us. And he says in verse 11, "You brought us into the net. You laid a crushing burden on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, yet you have brought us out to a place of abundance." You let people ride over our heads, and crushing burdens on our back? I suspect the crushing burdens on the back and riding over the heads is actually their slavery in Egypt that he's probably referring to. But either way, it doesn't matter what the challenge is, what the trial is. What they're referring to is that even in the midst of all the difficulty, they have come out of it blessed. And that's the point that he's making. That he's trying to get us to see and understand. Because Isaiah is writing this to a people who understand the difficulties they went through to become a nation, understand the difficulties they were presently going through, and the ones that were going to come in the future, the prophesied ones. But he's telling them, he's reminding them that God will see you through them. He won't remove them, though, but he will take care of you through them. Now, as I listened to all that, I started to think, and I don't know if this is what Paul had when some of his writings, he anticipates questions, and maybe that was just the Holy Spirit helping him. But also, I started thinking in this passage, I could think of myself, I could hear other people thinking it. Yeah, but what about all the people who have been burned or killed? And how did they get seen through? And that's actually why, coming to the last passage, looking for something better, in Hebrews 11, the whole chapter in the book of Hebrews is about those with faith. A lot of people like to refer to the chapter as kind of a hall of fame of faith. It mentions a lot of faithful people in the Old Testament and the things that they endured. But all of them, the point of the whole chapter to some degree is all of them died looking for something better. None of them had received yet the something better. Not Abraham, not Moses, all the way through as he lists everybody. But I just wanted to read just a few of those verses. So verse 1, 6, and then 32 through 39. Because some of these people who endured, their endurance went all the way to death. Some of them endured and then they were okay after that. But some of them, their endurance went all the way to the point that they were killed. And so he says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Are you certain? Do you have trust that heaven is real? That the heavenly things that God has talked about, that the heavenly inheritance that Jesus has told us is setting aside for us, do we trust that? Do we believe it? By the way, next week I'm going to talk about that trust and faith and why this, what we're talking about today, helps that. So this kind of a two-part lesson. Next week will be part two. But he says, understand how letting us go through these trials affects faith, affects our trust in him, our conviction of the things that we do not see. Now, in verse 6, he says, without faith, it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And so my thought when I was thinking about he will not let us be consumed in the fire, it's like, well, what about all the people that actually did get burned up? How did you not let them get consumed? And that's what I brought to this chapter. And so starting in verse 32, he says, and what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets. Now, if we were just to go through this small list of men in verse 32, like, there's a lot of problems in these guys' lives. And do you remember how Samson dies? He was crushed to death by a building. As he crushed to death a bunch of other people. So his fire, his trial, ended with him being killed. Because that's sometimes the outcome of our fire and our waters that rise up. But even in that situation, he's telling us, you won't die. I have got you. You will be fine. And so he goes, who through the faith they conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, Most of these we would probably, if we thought about them, we'd probably remember some of the stories in the Old Testament. But he says, "Were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life." So they notice that almost everybody before that had, for the most part, they had survived much of their trials. But now he begins to talk about people who didn't survive their trials. They died in the midst of their trials, but they died looking for something better. That hope never goes away. And so he's talking about others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. Sawn in two is kind of a historical account of how Isaiah dies. So it wasn't a magic trick. When they got through sawing him in two, he was really in two parts. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these last couple of verses are the part that we really have to hold in our heart, especially in the trials that we see around us, not only in our country, but just in our life in general. "And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect." We are looking forward to that something better with them. They're looking to enjoy it with us. We are all going to enjoy it together. And you will be kept well and alive through the fire and through the water. To this day, that he can give you that which he has promised, something better. Because that's the hope. That's the part that the challenge of all the trials is that sometimes all the disappointment, all the upset, they make us lose hope. All of the failures make us go, "I can't do this." And he's saying, "No, I've got you. Trust me. I'll be with you to the end of the age," as Jesus said himself. We're going to end there. I appreciate your time this morning. We're going to talk about how these trials affect faith for the better and how our faith can grow. But you know, in the times of trials, like in the burning up or testing of silver, sometimes we can look at it, if you were to, you know, dig up a piece of silver and go, "Wow, look how big that silver is." And then you put it in the fire and burn it up. And then you kind of like take off all the junk and go, "Oh, there's a lot less silver than I thought." Well, sometimes that's true of our faith. Sometimes we think we have faith this big, but when it gets tried and tested and we kind of burn off all the parts, it's like, "Well, I guess I wasn't really trusting God." But at the end, there's still a core. My faith like a mustard seed. There's still that trust that God will help me and be with me no matter what. And that's what he's trying to get us. But it doesn't matter how small it is. It matters how pure it is, how good it is, how strong it is, how great it is in a sense. So we're going to talk about that next week. But if you're here today and you need help through any trials, he didn't tell us that we have to silently go through trials. He didn't say we have to go through them alone. He told us that not only is he with us, but that he has given us one another to help us through these trials so that we don't endure alone. It's harder to go through them alone. So don't allow yourself to endure them alone. Reach out. Talk to people. Talk to brethren. Talk to those, especially those who are wise, who have some wisdom and experience behind them. Don't just talk to those you know that, you know, at your own age, especially if you're young. Talk to people who have been through things. that can help you and have wisdom and have knowledge of God's Word to give you some advice. But don't do it alone. And if you're here today and need help in anything, please, we urge you not to come forward, but to let us know. Send us an email, send us a text, give us a phone call, yell across the room. Could use some help. I could use your prayers. Anything you need, and we can, if we are able to help you, we want to. And so we're going to sing a song to close out. You have that up there already. We're going to sing song 604. I'll let Ben come up here in a second. So appreciate all everybody here today. Please reach out if you need anything. Ben?
Let's stand.
So